as vicious flames engulfed the 850-year-old masterpiece of Gothic architecture, France's president said a part of us is burning.
Like, I saw a lot of people crying on the streets, and it's all because it's the symbol. It's the symbol of France. It's the symbol of generations.
The fire broke out in the attic around 6:50 local time, about 5 minutes after Notre Dame closed for the day. It spread to the roof at the rear of the cathedral. In less than an hour, flames spread to its giant spire, which just 13 minutes later collapsed. 400 firefighters battled, but at times appeared dwarfed by the fire, which tore through the soaring structure, fueled by the wood of 1,300 oak trees that made up part of an interior network of wooden beams. Dropping heavy water from the air was not an option, for fear it had caused the entire structure to collapse. Two-thirds of the roof was ravaged. But medieval stonemasons may have saved Notre Dame by doing such a good job on the buttresses that survived the fire. There was a rush to save artwork and artifacts. Paris's mayor said the Holy Crown of Thorns and other precious pieces had been successfully recovered. Today we're getting our first look inside, where the cross on the altar appears to shine amid the devastation. Stone saints look toward firefighters, and some pews survived. Attention is now turned to the stained glass windows and the organ, one of the oldest in the world.
All right, that was a CBS report, and it doesn't seem like only yesterday, but that was April of 2019 when Notre Dame suffered that terrible fire in Paris, France. We covered that with the help of some friends in Paris that I've been interviewing for several years, as you can see. And at CPAC a week or so ago, I was able to interview in person Kate Pesse. She is the wife of Alessandra Pesse, and they both had the Alexis de Tocqueville Institute in France. I met them in the United States, but it's the first time I've ever been able to actually see Kate in person. We had quite the discussion, and of course, we hearkened back to Notre Dame, and ironically, Kate and Alexandra are strong believers. I think Alexandra is Roman Catholic, and Kate is a Protestant, but fervent believers raising six children in Paris. So the conversation is about the culture in Paris, as well as raising children there. It's a fascinating discussion. I think you'll find it really very interesting. You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. I'll just be frank with you. We must save these babies. We have to do that. As the left turns up the burner on their attempt to switch the narrative in this country about the value of human life, boy, have they been successful. It's amazing to me how young women have become angry and just risen up to unite over their right, you know, their reproductive right to kill their babies. They call it a health right. Women's health. Who knew? This has nothing to do with women's health. In fact, it's very damaging to women in the long term. Sometimes women are not even able to bear children again. It has a terrible effect on women. Maybe not in the moment when they're teenagers although I would even argue with myself on that. You go through a procedure like that, it has to affect you deeply. Life does not just go on as usual. And nevertheless, they say this is a women's health right. Well, we have to change that in order to save these babies, and that's where Preborn comes in, and they show ultrasounds to moms, young moms, older moms, whatever, and women are women. When they see that baby, and it looks like them or their partner, they see the thumb sucking, they see the heart beating, they cannot, generally speaking, in their baby's life, unless their hearts are really hard. And so Preborn has been very successful, and they've been successful because you have been so generous. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. Well, you know, this is Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. That part I always forget to tell you. You can call us if you have a comment about today's show or just something that you want to share, a suggestion, a complaint. You can call us at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040. You could write us at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can listen on any podcast platform. AFR.net is home base, American Family Radio, but you can also listen on Spotify and Apple and any of the podcast platforms that you're accustomed to using. You can go to sandyrios.com. That's a real easy way to listen. You can also find out more about the show. You can order my new book. All kinds of things are on that website. Well, I hope you enjoyed just a little taste of Florence today with my guest, Kate Pesce, at CPAC in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago. It was a real pleasure. So I hope you enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Hi, this is Sandy Rios from the very, very noisy CPAC 2024. This has been a wild ride. It's actually been wonderful. I so enjoy being here. There's a lot of people now. And but they're wonderful people. I just did a book signing and met so many wonderful people. This is fun for me because I've interviewed our next guest several times through the years, but never in person. And that's because she lives in Paris, France.
That's right.
Kate, I'm going to get this right. Pussy.
Well done. Yeah.
Is from Paris, and she's away from her four children.
Six
children. Yes. Left her husband. I was not left him, you know, not like that. But is here at CPAC in his stead. So he didn't get to come this time, Alexandre?
No, Alexandre did not get to come this time. Nope, he stayed back in France. He's got a lot of important work to do.
Okay, well, let me just set the table a little bit better, because through the years we've talked about what's going on in France. We talked about the yellow vest revolt. We talked about the burning of Notre Dame.
Yes.
And just things like that. And so Kate and Alexandre have been a wonderful resource for me, because I do care very much. I lived overseas and for a while time, and I don't know, we're all connected now, a lot more than we even ever used to be. So, Kate, Alessandra used to be the head of the Tocqueville Fellowship.
Yes.
And that's after Alexis de Tocqueville.
That's correct.
You know what you should tell my American audience who Alexis de Tocqueville was?
Alexis de Tocqueville is a French philosopher. And he came over to the United States and observed America during a very essential time. He became very close with George Washington. He observed the American people, how that happened. He was really famous for his book, Democracy in America. If you haven't read it, I recommend that you read it. It's incredibly powerful to see the force that is the United States, and as well as some warnings about what our form of government is.
You know what? I'd love to read that. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I just know snippets and some quotes from him. It's like they're it's so loud.
It's
what's
so
going
loud.
On
There's lots
there?
Of excitement it, going on here, like, CPAC.
I know. Anyway, one of my favorite quotes from Alexis de Tocqueville, sorry for my butchering, but was something like, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, Kate, he talks about the strength of America. He was amazed. This is after the Revolution, when he came in. And he said, it wasn't until I went into America's churches that I understood their strength. That's something
right.
that much more poetic than that. And so, we've talked a lot about, you know, faith. We talked about faith in France. And so France, America's another story. But France has been post-Christian, as it were, for a long time, for decades. Would you say since the Revolution?
Absolutely. I think especially when the Republic came in, that became the new religion.
Yeah. Equality. Yeah, well, you helped me. I know.
Égalité, fraternité, liberté.
Yeah. Yeah, liberté. Mm-hmm. And their revolution was quite a bit different than ours. Are you a French citizen yet?
I am not.
Okay, so you're still American.
After 20 years now, I'm still American.
All right. How would you explain the difference in the French Revolution and the American Revolution?
I think the French Revolution was truly a destroying something that had been built over centuries. And the American Revolution was really something that created a movement. It created a country. It was built, and especially the role of God in the American Revolution was such a poignant one compared to France, where it destroyed everything. It really wanted to make the state replace God's place in France, as including the church.
Yeah, I think you're right. And just the elevation of man, humanism,
exactly.
Which is,
exactly.
You know, I don't know, people don't, I think, usually think about that, but it's the worship of man or the elevation of man. One of the most incredible moments I ever had in my very long life was I was in Moscow for 2 weeks. We did our first American radio show from Moscow, and that was during this, when the Iron Curtain was still there. It was still the Soviet Union, so that was amazing. But there was a park. There's lots of parks up there, but I saw a statue of Lenin, and of course Lenin was their, like, their godlike figure.
Uh-huh.
All these totalitarian states have to have this, you know, godlike figure. Mm. And it's got a, it's a, this though was a monument to the achievement of man. It's that famous, like, beautiful form of a man, huge, he has his arms crossed.
Right.
But here's the thing, in the park, they had piped in patriotic, Russian patriotic music, which is what totalitarians always have. You know, they strip the culture of its music and style and music, and they all start worshiping the dear leader in North Korea and singing patriotic songs. But here's the thing. So the music's in there, I'm walking around, and the statue, though, this bowl statue, it looks like an Oscar, I think would be the best way to describe it, was tipped over and covered in, like, vines and all kinds of things. Huh. And, Kate, I thought, this is, we knew that glasnost was happening, openness, and so we knew that the Soviet Union was losing its grip. But this was a visual. It was a visual. The monument to the achievement of man. Yeah, not so much to say about that, but that's the big deception, I think. I have to talk to you about personal stuff first here.
Okay.
Now, you were an American girl who married a Frenchman. How did that happen?
Well, this is actually what I'm doing here. I've taken over as executive director for the Tocqueville Fellowship, and this was launched 20 years ago. And 20 years ago, on the very maiden voyage of this fellowship, where six young French conservatives are brought over, this was created by my husband, Alexandre, bring them over to kind of have a conservative 101 to see how America's conservative movement is working together, and they take these ideas and this inspiration and hopefully bring it back to France. Over 20 years, we've had lots of success. But I met Alex, the first Tocqueville Fellowship, at the College Republican National Convention, where I was chair of the Delaware College Republicans, and I had already planned to finish my last semester to study military history in Paris. So we met and kept in touch, and 6 months later, I had already, you know, planned to be over there. So that's how.
Oh, now that is happened. Nothing. That's kind of, that's a real miracle, isn't it?
That's a real God wink.
So Paris, no less. Not even just a, like,
nope,
a country real French village. You're right in the thick of things.
Paris.
Yeah. Is a what would you describe? I've never had the privilege of going to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
I've traveled so much. I lived in Berlin. Never Paris. So what I know, what I see in the movies, I know the descriptions, but what do you, how would you describe the feel of Paris, like compared to New York, or how would you describe it as before? Now we're going to talk about the trouble, but
sure.
Kind of
I'm a huge fan of Paris. I was a Francophile and in love with Paris before I fell in love with my husband. So that's fortunate. But Paris is one of those cities. It is the city to me that is aesthetically perfect as far as over the centuries. You know, if you go to London, which is a lovely city, it's beautiful, but you have one century built onto another and it doesn't quite flow. I think the advantage with Paris is that it flows. It truly is a beautiful, architecturally beautiful city, and one filled with what the French would call the terroir. You know, you can taste all the fruits of France's land, you know, from the cheese to the wine to the bread. It's just this magical place of wonder still.
You know, I know, just because I've read, I just listened to, who was the cook? Julia Child. Mm-hmm. I just listened to My Life in France. I listened to, you know, Audible. Mm-hmm. And she describes it in her own very special way about France, you know, and all the things
with
that
she did. Lots of butter.
Lots of butter, yes, exactly. And I've certainly eaten French food, and it is really It's the creme de la creme. It is just wonderful,
it
wonderful
is. Food. They have a savoir-faire. They have a way of doing things that has been passed down through centuries, and it truly is exceptional. And France as a country is an exceptionally beautiful country. I can understand why the French are so proud of being French. You know, in a country that's the size of Texas, you have such a diverse country as far as mountains and plains and oceans and deserts, and it's just so dynamic and beautiful. And the French people are really unique, very, very unique. Each region has its own specificity.
I think of them as being very frank, I guess because French. But I know, but I never thought about that
they
before.
They are Franks.
Very
yes.
frank and very, yes. like just telling it like it is.
They're very Gaulois. The Gaul, you know, they're very direct.
Yeah, I kind of like that, actually. It was very off-putting when I first was around Europeans, because the Germans are that way, too. They're just so much more plain-spoken than Americans, who beat around the bush. And after you get used to it, it's kind of refreshing.
It is, but then you have to come back to America and adjust to try to understand what everybody's saying.
Is it hard for you to come back?
No, I love coming home. There's nothing better than America. France is a beautiful country, but I am incredibly privileged and blessed to have been born here and raised here. And my father's a Marine, so... You know,
your father's a Marine.
My father is a U.S. Marine.
So how does he feel about you living in Paris?
Oh, both my parents. It's very hard. Both. Never forget, a Marine's wife is also a Marine. So both my parents are extremely sad to not be with us, but they come over, and we come home.
Yeah. Mm. Well, all right. So now let's talk about the issue at hand. Paris right now, when I think of Paris, I think of the overrun of the Islamic migrants who now have these no-go zones. And the last time we talked, I think the issue was that there were attacks on regular French in the street, just out of the blue.
Yes.
Now, what's happened with that?
Well, that is still occurring, and at a rate that's devastating. But I think that's what is on the good side. You have 65% of the French in polls who have declared that this needs to change. And that's a historical change for the French people to say, this is enough, we can't do this anymore. And I think you're going to see that in the European elections that are coming up. You have a huge historical change as far as the Socialist Party is really not going to make much of an impact during the elections. The Républicaine, which was the center-right party, is no longer really going to do a major score. And now you have the two parties, Reconquête and the Rassemblement National, which is Marine Le Pen's party, but the man who's running is Jordan Bardella, a young man, and the woman is Marion Maréchal, who is Marine Le Pen's niece, is running Reconquête.
Wow.
So you have these two real conservatives, and even the leader of the Républicaine is conservative. So in the three parties of the right, you actually have conservatives who are running. And so that's really encouraging. And Jordan Bardella is projected to get 25-30% in this election. So this is a big change. And you're seeing kind of what happened in Italy and in the Netherlands with the conservatives coming up. I do think we're going to see that in France.
So I'm sorry, you know, this is, I'm out of the loop on what's happened. So when is the election?
The election's in June.
June.
Of this year.
And how about Macron? Is he running again?
Macron. Oh, this is the European elections.
Yes, okay.
Macron's got a few more years in there.
No,
there's a few more years for that. But already the European Union has a huge impact on what's happening in France.
Yeah.
So this means a lot. This is going to really, you know, we hear a lot about Hungary, what's happening in Hungary and what's happening in Poland. If we get a conservative in there, the conservative majority between the three heads of the, if all three of the right parties get into the European Union, we're going to see some big impact.
Wow. That's what I'm, you know, this is, did you go to the first night, that international conference? It was by invitation. It might have been media. They have, you know, CPAC has tentacles in so many countries,
yes.
And Hungary was represented in Nigel Farage and Kate, the former prime minister who was ousted.
Katja.
Catalina. Liz Truss. There we go. She was there, and there were a lot of people there. It was Japan, Korea. It was just fascinating.
Great.
And they're having, you know, I think every country is having the same kind of struggle. Really, the people are rising up. And it's a very tenuous place right now for every country that was represented there. There are the powers, we call it the deep state. And the other countries had a different, lady from Argentina, they had a different name for it. But it's the administrative state
Sure.
that has gotten so powerful that they feel that they, they're ruling with an iron hand, but the people don't like what they're doing.
Right.
Is that true in France?
Absolutely. But I think the advantage in France, and I think you saw this during COVID, is that they're natural resistors. They're always questioning the authority, and with the history that they have, I'm not surprised. And so you have a people who are naturally resistant, and with that, they wait, they're patient, they understand that, you know, things happen, but comes a point where they do break, and now you're seeing that. If you have, you know, 65% of the people who say, I want a stop to this immigration, you're going to see some major changes coming up, and I really do think that June is going to be a big indicator of what we can look forward to over the next few years in France.
Now, how about this, what I'll call war on farming and agriculture?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I hear about Holland and the uprising of the farmers and the Netherlands, and France. So what's happening in France? Same thing?
Well, there was a huge demonstration by the farmers, and, you know, they, rightfully so. They're tired of it. It's been a huge attack on those who are giving it. But it's not going to stop there. You know, the state did give in to some of their demands, less taxes, you know, inheritance rules, things like that, which is great, you know, so it quelled that. But, you know, what's next? What's next?
Well, they never
stop. Is it going to be doctors?
The left never stops. They never stop.
No, they never stop.
They're not stopped with agriculture, even if there's been a victory. They never stop. You know, and the normal people have families like you and mm-hmm. Alessandra. And they're raising their families, so they're working hard, and they're not constantly trying to agitate, which is what communists and leftists do.
Mm-hmm.
And they never stop.
They never stop. But that means we have to be even smarter and work even harder.
Yes.
But they are. I do want to make sure that that's said, that the conservative movement over in France is really growing. Civil society is growing. People are becoming more brave.
Wow.
French businessmen who are conservative are starting to really invest and take action.
Yeah.
There is a beautiful thing happening, and I'm blessed to be able to have my husband and what he's doing there, because he runs a training institute, Institut de Formation Politique, and he's trained thousands of young French conservatives, many of whom are in placed as staffers for all these people running for office. They're all getting in. They're journalists. He runs a journalism school. They've trained in 5 years, 160 conservative journalists, 100 of whom are actually practicing journalism today.
Wow.
You have the Taxpayers Union. My husband is president of that. And with Benoit, they have a film on how France got to $3 billion in debt that has 1.6 million views on YouTube without any publicity. So people are awake. Are really waking up, and there's a movement. The young people are dynamic. They want to make a difference. They want to learn, and they're creating a real civil society to combat.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I saw an inkling of that was over the gay marriage issue. What has that been?
The Manif
pour tous. 10 years ago?
The Manif pour tous. It is a déclencheur, because before it was really just about taxes.
Yeah.
And with the Manif pour tous, you had a lot of the Catholic community come out. I mean, you had a lot of people. You had a lot of people in the streets. It was nice. You know, these families were out there, but they met a lot of resistance, which was hard for the state to see this kind of reaction. But the best thing about that is from this stemmed this realization, like, we can have an impact.
I remember that. It gives me goosebumps to even remember. I think there were like 100,000 to 200,000 people in Paris.
There were a million people. A million people. But
for gay marriage in France. I mean, that was a shocker. And it was wonderful, actually, to see.
It really, we were on the ground, and it was just nice to see these families coming together and take action. And, you know, a lot of very large families, so babies and strollers and things like that. It was really something that was a catalyst to what you're seeing today, as well as the training that came with that.
So, Kate, with the Yellow Vest Movement, which, as I recall, was a lot about gas prices and just the economics, just people not enough money. Mm-hmm. I remember hearing the saddest stories from Frenchmen to a translator that they didn't have enough money for Christmas or to feed their families. And the gasoline, because some live in rural communities, it costs so much to drive their cars. What happened with that? Did anything come from that?
No, I think the state backed off a little bit, but now they're doing these, you know, clean by 2030 rulings, and they're really on the attack of the average man. But however, I've heard that some European countries are backing off the electric cars, and so there's some things going with the environmental policies that they were doing. So we'll see how that happens. But for the Yellow Vest, unfortunately, it was hijacked by a lot of political people because it was really a ground movement. And a lot of women actually were leading that movement. It was very, very interesting because they just had had enough. They just have had enough. And it's really attacking those people who are delivering the goods. You know, it was basically based on gas. You know, they wanted to take away diesel fuel, which France still uses a lot of, but that's what they can afford, and they're not going to buy new cars. I mean, the French keep their cars for 20 years,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So that started as a beautiful movement, and eventually it was hijacked, unfortunately, and made a big political thing, and then the Antifa came in, and, you know, Macron let the Antifa destroy and then blamed it on the yellow vest, and it was just a burning and destruction, which the base was not.
So am I to believe then that Macron is not still very popular?
No, he is not popular. Mm-hmm. He is not popular, but the French people still, the older generation especially, is complexed. They're, you know, you have that social pressure to not vote conservatively or to the right, and that is changing. That is changing, but not with like the 68 generation. They're going to stick with what is socially acceptable.
The establishment.
Yeah.
I think here we have the reverse. The older people are more, you know, like the rebels, mm-hmm. and they're sick of the establishment.
Yeah.
But I think our young people are kind of mirroring what you described. I think I've talked to several of them here and in other places I've been lately. Mm-hmm. It seems like they're not the middle ones, like the millennial, but the generations. They're just kind of waking up a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's two sides to that. You know, there's also some bad stats about them.
Sure.
But I think some of them are just really looking at what's happening, and they want a better world.
They do.
And a better life.
They do, and it's affecting their everyday life. You know, the young people in France, so the Institute has started high school training. You know, has taken it from college students to young professionals, and now is doing high school training, and they pull them on what their issues are. You know, before it used to be taxes or, you know, whatever. Now it's security. You know, so the political stance is really affecting their lives. They don't feel safe going out. They don't. So they want to be involved. They've had enough, just as you said. So I think that's great for this young generation. It's going to affect them. So I'm really pleased to see that this movement's happening.
Kate, I know you keep up with what's going on here. And you know that our education system has been totally corrupted. We are like, I don't know, I want to say third from the bottom in testing in the world, or fifth maybe, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Surely that's not quite right, but it's horrific. And when I was a kid, we were number one in the world, steadily, mm-hmm. always, great education system. So are you seeing, and of course that happened in Korea, that turned the young generation of Koreans, it twisted them to start being sympathetic with North Korea and mm-hmm. not America, and it's happened, you know, the Soviets did it earlier. Propaganda is the way of the left. Mm-hmm. So has that happened in France?
Absolutely. And I think COVID was one of the most wonderful things in that sense that could have happened, because it allowed parents to see what their children were being taught.
It's true.
That was a wonderful thing. And I think you saw that in the United States. You had a whole lot of Republican governors. You have Youngkin in Virginia. The Democrat moms came out and went out and voted. And that really has an impact, because when you mess with the kids, it's refreshing to see. I mean, we couldn't deny what was happening. I had to take all my children out of the international school in Paris because they just went completely woke. So, you know, this is happening, and you have a lot of movements in a lot of creating schools and things like that in France. So there's a lot of hope in that, as
absolutely.
Parents get, yeah, as parents, but parents have to take action. Parents have to be aware, and we trusted the schools. We trusted the authority, whether you're in France or in the United States. You know, kids are our responsibility, and we are their parents and need to step up for them.
I would just add one thing. I think grandparents have to step up also.
I agree with that.
I believe every
my
citizen,
parents are definitely involved.
it's going to take us all to mm-hmm. jump in and try to do something to stop what's happening in the world, not mm-hmm. just in France and not just in the United States.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I have to ask you, we've gotten right up against it, but I didn't ask you. Spiritually, do you see, I think I asked you this last time too, do you see any, okay, I'll put it this way. When we spoke about the burning of Notre Dame, I will never forget the scene of people in that plaza on their knees with candles singing hymn, something that was a traditional
mm-hmm.
French,
mm-hmm.
French. That was, I mean, again, here come the goosebumps again. It was so moving, because I know France has been such a dry place, and God has been not popular. And not that there aren't believers, because mm-hmm. like you and Alexandra are for sure. But what do you think, the temperature, if you hold your finger up to the wind. What do you think?
I think that there's definitely a spiritual movement, a renaissance, if you will, in France. I think things are moving, and it's been wonderful to see within the church. You know, a lot of those people come through my husband's training institute, Institute for Mission Politique, I'll call it IFP. They come through IFP. A lot of these people who were leading the charge of those prayers and fighting to get into church come through IFP. So these young people not only have the will, they have the training now to do it. And the priests, the young priests that are coming in are really, the ones that I've encountered have this amazing faith, and they understand what's happening in their country and their responsibility before God to help their country, not just hide away and be away. They really are making an impact in society. It's small right now, but you know, it doesn't take much. It doesn't take much to create a movement, and you can just feel, for me as a believer in that world, I think that there's a movement in France that we're gonna see in the future, just some wonderful things.
Is it safe to come there now for tourists?
Yes, it's safe. You have to be aware. You have to be aware, just like anywhere. Is it safe to come to D.C. anymore?
No, I'd say no. I'd say don't do that.
You know, I think wherever you go anywhere today that you do need to be aware. But visit France. You know, maybe come into Paris, but go see, you know, other beautiful places in France. Go see Normandy. Go to the... not many people know about this wonderful amusement park that's in Vendée. If you want to go up to Normandy, go out to Vendée and go to Puy du Fou. It's a historical park. You will not regret it. It's got shows. It's got it's got the gladiators. It's got the musketeers with flamenco dancing and dressage horses. It's in Puy du Fou. Puy du Fou is in Vendée. It's existed for 45 years, and it is an amazing place for young families to go. So if you guys are in France, please hit that place up. It's wonderful.
Okay, we're winding down, but I do want to know what it's like for your children. You grew up in America, so you know what a good American upbringing is like. Mm. But what do you think? Has this been a good or how could I ask this question? What effect has it had on your children's lives to grow up in Paris?
Well, I think that there is a beauty about France. I think they kept a lot of the tradition more than Americans do. They sit down at the table and they have real meals. You know, it's not rushing as much as they take time to spend family time together. I think the dressing of the children, they remain more conservatively dressed, and children dress as children, you know, until much later. So for that, I'm very grateful. I think the role of women also, you know, the French have this kind of expectation that women, you know, take care of themselves. They're also women as much as their role in the family, but that the role of the woman is very important in France, and I think that that's something remarkable. The French have Joan of Arc, you know, they have Saint Genevieve. That's a neat role for my children. I wish that I could have shared more of what I experienced as far as having so many Christians around me openly. But I think that this is our life. This is where God has them, and He's blessed them. I miss the flag flying. I mean, I grew up on a military basis. I grew up at Quantico, and I had the blessing of being raised in that environment. But we do our best. Every Memorial Day, we get out there to the American cemeteries. We write a thank you note to the soldiers. They each get to choose where they put their stuff. We go to Bellowwood, and we, you know, do the homage to the U.S. Marines. And so there are ways to blend these cultures. But yeah,
my own grandchildren have never lived here. And they live in Vancouver, British Columbia, and they lived in Scotland for 4 years.
Wow.
And so their grandmother is always sending things about America.
Yes.
4th of July, clothing, you know, telling them stories. Yeah. Like Thanksgiving. I mean, I'm always on a crusade because I want them to understand, you know, they really are. They have dual citizenship, some of them, but... it's a great... No country has a story like ours.
No.
No country.
Do you know who does a real good job of that? And I am very thankful is PragerU Kids.
PragerU? Oh, sure.
PragerU Kids has done a wonderful job for founding fathers and American holidays. There's also a great book, How to Raise an American, that explains all the American holidays.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm writing this down. I have to see Christmas on the... Well, wait. I've got to wait. How to Raise Americans.
How to Raise an American.
And
How to
America.
Raise an American. And PragerU Kids is really phenomenal.
PragerU Kids.
PragerU Kids.
Oh, well, see, I'm sending this on to Canada for my children. Kate, anything else about France you want us to know?
Oh, please keep France in your prayers if you think about it. And And I'm just so grateful for that. You know, we're all fighting the same fight. We're all on the same team. And it's a joy to be here to be able to speak about that with you today. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Wonderful to have time with you in person.
Thank you.
So God bless you and Alessandra and his six children who are still trying to be, you're trying to get them to be Americans, right?
Yeah. Always, always.
Do they have dual citizenship?
They are Americans.
Do they have dual citizenship?
They are dual citizen. Yeah. Oh, they're country loving Americans.
So
they love. They love to come home. They're Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A. That's the way to bring them in.
You know what? My kids are American. There's no question about it.
I think that's very cool. And it's a real achievement, actually.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, God bless you, Kate.
Thank you. God bless
thank
you.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, it's the Tocqueville Fellowship. Kate is the head of the Tocqueville Fellowship.
Yep.
I'm talking, you know, pretty casually here, but she has a very important role to play, and they do great work. So thank you, Kate.
Thank you, Sandy.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, every show I tell you that an ultrasound with preborn is $28. That's kind of the quantifier. It gives you an idea of what you can do to help to save babies through showing mothers the picture of their babies before they're born. But if you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a bigger way? Your tax-deductible donation of $5,000 will sponsor preborn's entire network for 24 hours, helping to rescue 200 babies. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. And that's where you can, they have 100% charity rating. So you can give with confidence to preborn at preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small-town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. That was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at AFR.net and SandyRios.com.
French President Emmanuel Macron has led what's known as a sealing ceremony to enshrine in the Constitution a woman's right to an abortion. Abortion was decriminalized in France 50 years ago, but the Parliament voted for the amendment on Monday, making France the first country in the world to guarantee such a right. What is the general position in France? Because, of course, many seeing this as a direct response, if not a response, in stark contrast to what's happening in the US.
Well, the French like, and certainly sort of the French establishment like, nothing better than to be leading the world on social issues like this. I mean, that's a heritage of the revolution. They like to sense that they have spotted the way societies are going and have written into their laws and constitutions protections which other countries will then follow. That's certainly the case here. And the message being put out, you might say, rather sort of arrogantly, certainly the accusations come that, from that quarter, they're arrogating to themselves their sort of universal mission to show the world what can happen if you push women's rights to their logical conclusion, which they would say is to put it into the Constitution, make sure that is completely fixed for good, and that even if there are winds of change in the future on social and political matters, it won't be undone. So in general, I'd say, as I say, people go along with that, that of course there's opposition to abortion here, as there is in many countries. There's, you know, a strong-ish Catholic Church, a minority of, say, 15% of the population are against this. Others are sceptical, not because they're anti-abortion, but because they feel that this is a bit of a political stunt. But no one wants to say that, because if they say that, they'll come out sounding like they're anti-women's rights. So in general, it's been a sort of happy moment, and one in which France can think of itself as leading the world, and they love doing that here.
All right, so that happened after I talked to Kate, that enshrining abortion in the French a constitution. This is Sandy Rios back with you on Sandy Rios 24/7. So, but here's the thing. I think Kate alluded to this in our conversation. Abortion has been very restricted in France, and I believe it still remains that way. That's why he suggested it might be a stunt to try to sort of relay kind of a in-your-face to the United States, who was fighting the battle still. But in France, I think abortion is restricted, I believe it still is, to no more than 16 weeks. So that after that, I don't believe as I understand it, the reason they think it's a stunt is because they did not make abortion legal in any circumstance, like many of our states are doing here, shamefully. But it still has limits. When I talked with Kate about this, when the whole issue of gay marriage came up, I think a million people filled the streets in Paris. I remember talking to Alessandra Pace at that time. It was amazing. I did not expect that. You always think of French as being, the city of love, Paris, or, that they're so lascivious because they don't have these sexual boundaries that other countries have. But I don't think that's true based on what we're seeing here. So it's not the victory that I think Macron would like us to believe that it is. I thought you'd enjoy at least having an update on what's happening there. I find it's a good thing. At least I believe it's a very good thing for us to understand what's happening around the world. As in that international summit that I have described to you at a CPAC this year, an understanding of what's happening across the globe helps us now to understand a lot about what's happening here, especially our friends who've joined us in this country and become citizens, who are former, citizens of communist states. They give us so much insight into what not to do. They see the signs. It was so ironic. You may remember that I was on Hungarian television a year or so ago, and the interviewers, through an interpreter, were asking me, how is it that America could be implementing LGBT information to schools, or that they would remove parental rights and not let the schools, not let parents have something to say about what the kids were learning. And I just laughed at them because I said, what you don't realize is before you were born, when a communism was flaring away in the Soviet Union, this is what was happening in your country. And now we couldn't understand how you could put up with that. Now you want to know how we can put up with the same thing. It's just so ironic. You can learn from international knowledge, from people that overseas, and I highly recommend it. And of course, Kate and Alessandra have brought us some rich information through the years, and I'm grateful for that relationship, and I hope you enjoyed it on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.